A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And as I'm preparing to record with you today, I kind of mentioned this when I talked to you on the phone earlier. There's like a new challenge all the time. And once we get past several, there's another one. For example, my neighbors are mowing the lawn right now. So
just so you know, we record obviously weeks ahead. And right now we are in the midst of the hurricane weather. We're not getting the hurricane, but like we're getting like thunderstorms and lightning storms and all that.
Oh, yeah.
It's past for now, but it may kick up. So good luck.
I actually did not know that, but yeah, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. A new challenge all the time. Interesting recording in your basement. You don't have like a professional studio.
Yeah, at home. Well, you know what though? The upside was in quarantine, we're ready for it. We already recorded home.
That's right.
The one positive.
One positive. So I'm going to let you get started.
So this is a case that like I heard about it a couple years ago and I kind of was just like, meh. Didn't interest me. My sister actually followed it pretty closely and, like, has done some Googling. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, two people have requested it now. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I'll dig into it a little bit. And I try, like you guys know, I try really hard not to make a decision till the end. I still don't think I have a decision.
Well, let's see what I come up with. Maybe I'll throw you for a loop today.
Okay. So today I'm going to talk about Sneha or Sneha Phillips. And y'all, I have tried. I know that you email us if we mispronounce things, and that's fine. I have heard it said. I've listened to probably 50 news clips and three either documentaries or podcasts. Sneha or Sneha seems to be 50-50. So I'm just going to pronounce it as Sneha Phillip.
All right.
If I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Melissa.
Sneha was originally, she's from India. Her parents moved to upstate New York when she was a kid. She was raised in upstate New York. She eventually got into Johns Hopkins University for undergrad and then went to Chicago Medicine School of Medicine for medical school.
Smart girl.
Yes. Very dedicated, very smart. She started medical school in 95. She was born in 1969, just so y'all know. In medical school, she met a guy named Ron Lieberman, and they started dating. They had a lot of things in common. They were both super creative and doctors, which I feel like is a rough balance, is a uncommon balance, to be super creative and super scientific.
Oh, I know what you mean. You're usually really strong in the arts or really strong in a science. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So they were both and they really enjoyed, they were got along awesome. Then they decided they're going to graduate. They're going to go to med school. And they're going to do the thing. She was a year ahead of him in med school. So she decided to take a year off so they could go to graduate together.
That is so sweet.
See, I have a very different perspective of it.
I think it's sweet, but I'm like, I can't wait when I'm like, no, graduate.
I'm not waiting for a man to do anything.
Right, right. It can be looked at it's two ways, as you can see.
As you can see, I would not, whatever. Either way, takes a year off. She actually went to Europe and traveled. Good for her. So they graduate med school together and they both get internships or the residencies in New York City. So they pack up, they move to New York City. And they basically start their life. They got married in 2000. They moved into a downtown apartment, which I assume was 2 feet big. Mm-hmm. And they both just went to they both like started their lives. So it seemed to be like a match made in heaven. You know, they were really happy together and all the things. This brings up September 10th, 2001.
Per the usual lately, it seems.
Yeah. So this day was a pretty standard day in that they had, well, I don't mean standard in like normal life, but it was pretty mundane, I guess. They had a court date in the morning. Then they went to breakfast. Then Ron went to work. And Sneha went home. She was had the day off, so was going to just, like, do whatever. Mm-hmm. So Ron comes home from work that evening, and she's not home. Now, here's the first glimpse of what I would consider something unsettling in their relationship. She wasn't home, and that wasn't unusual. She went out for drinks pretty regularly with her cousin or her friends. Okay. Or strangers.
What do you mean, strangers? What people she...
Like, she just met them at the bar.
Oh, like, she went alone, but she might have just been a person that talked to people and...
Yeah.
Drank with them. Okay.
Yeah. That doesn't faze me at all. It's the next part. Sometimes these nights out led her to just stay out all night and not come home. She would crash on the couch of strangers she met in the bars.
Okay, I have a couple things to say about that, but I'm going to wait.
Yeah, it's difficult because, like, in my relationship, that wouldn't work. But if it worked for them, it's the first glimpse we get in something may be more than what it seems.
Okay, fair.
So the next morning, Ron wakes up, likely around 5. He had to work at 6:30, and she wasn't home. So at this point, he was more annoyed than anything else. And he just gets dressed and heads to work. Mm-hmm. Now, this is September 11th, 2001. Ron has an 8 a.m. meeting. And when he gets out of the meeting, for lack of better words, all hell has broken loose. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you a 15-second timeline of the day the world stopped in the United States.
Yes.
At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 from Boston to L.A. hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center. By 9 a.m., most media was there on scene filming live. At 9:03, which if you were above, you know, an age of 10, you probably saw the second plane hit, which is United Airlines Flight 175, hit live because it happened on TV.
It still, like, stops my heart when I think about it.
Yeah, I have, like, goosebumps right now talking about it. At 9:03, it hit the South Tower. At 9:37 a.m., American Airlines Flight 77 struck the Pentagon. At 9:59 a.m., the South Tower of the World Trade Center collapses over approximately 10 seconds. At 10:03 a.m., United Flight 93 crashes near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And at 10:28 a.m., the North Tower of the World Trade Center collapses. At this point, the time between the first attack and the collapse of the second tower is 102 minutes. And the gravity of that whole, what I just read to you, and I read from CNN's timeline, the world stopped. And it's hard to wrap my head around my spouse being missing when the world stops.
Yeah. And you can't just pick up your phone. I mean, you have to remember that a lot of cell phone tower reception was through the World Trade Center.
Yeah, the tower was on top of it.
So when they went, all communication was lost. You're like living in the dark age, or probably realistically, it's like the apocalypse.
Yeah. So he goes into a meeting, and I think everyone, if you were above, you know, if you were school age and older, remembers where you were when the towers were hit. And, you know, I can't imagine, and the only thing I connect this to, and it's a little bit different, is I went into a meeting the day of the marathon bombing, and I came out to about 15 text messages because I knew people that were running it. Mm-hmm. And so he went into a meeting at 8 a.m. being annoyed that he didn't know where his wife was.
Yeah.
And he comes out at 9 a.m. And literally the world has stopped.
It's incredible in the worst way.
Right. Their house is only about 4 blocks or 5 blocks from Ground Zero. So he tries to call their house. She does not have a cell phone. Towers aren't able to handle the calls like you just said. And I mean, I remember driving home from school that day and not being able to use my cell phone.
Yeah.
And I was in Massachusetts. He's working in a hospital, though, and he has to be there because it's 9/11 and people are just coming, pouring through doors.
Absolutely.
At 3 o'clock, gets off work and is going to jump in an ambulance and ride up to Ground Zero with them. And then he'll walk home from there because that was, transportation stopped.
Yeah.
So what should have been a 25-minute ride took 6 hours.
Unthinkable.
So around 9 p.m., Ron gets to their apartment. And I don't understand this fact at all, but everyone reports it as fact. So we're just going to take it as that. The power is out, so none of the doors to the building will open. Because they're all powered doors.
Wow.
Now, I feel like this is a fire hazard, but it's what everyone says is fact. So he now is stuck outside his apartment with no idea where his wife is. So he goes to a friend's house who lives just outside the area to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
He says he did not sleep at all, which I can imagine.
Right.
The next morning, they finally are allowing people to get into their apartment. He gets home, he gets in, and he realizes that one of the windows was left open when he left for work on the 11th in the morning.
Yeah.
And the entire apartment has a layer of ash and soot.
I would absolutely think that.
And the only disturbances are from the cat's footprints.
Oh.
So now Ron realizes, okay, she didn't come home.
Yeah.
Even before 9/11.
Right.
So Ron panics and calls the police to report her missing. But over 10,000 people were also reported missing that day.
Of course they were. It took weeks, months. I mean, there's still questionable identifications today.
Yeah. So, you know, he does the right thing and he calls the police, but there's not a whole lot. I mean, police just say, literally, okay, we'll add her to the list. You know, there's not a whole lot else they can do.
There's just not enough men to handle this.
Right.
And women.
Right. Agreed, 100%. So at this point, Ron and her family are desperately seeking media attention. They want to get police involvement. But since technically she went missing on the 10th, media sort of isn't interested in her case because 9/11.
Yeah, they're not trying to identify her as a victim in the terrorist attacks.
Right, and they're also saying, like, she was missing before the attack happened. We don't even think she's here, you know?
Right, she could have been in Canada.
Exactly. Sneha's brother does something that I would consider a little reckless here.
Okay.
He does a media interview, and although they had been fighting and they had not spoken in over 2 weeks, he told them he was on the phone with her when the planes hit. And she told me that she was outside and she couldn't leave when people are hurt. And she hung up with him and ran to help the people.
Really?
So now the story catches some fire, right? Now we have this doctor that, like, ran in to help.
It's intense.
But the unintended consequence is now law enforcement is only focusing on her being at Ground Zero.
Right. They're not examining any other lead or possibility.
Right. So both police and Ron hire a private... Well, police do their investigation. Ron hires a private investigator. And what I'm about to tell you is a narrative of both of them combined. And I'll tell you where they start to break off.
Okay. Yeah.
So on September 10th, there is computer activity, including an IM chat with her mom, between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. in the apartment. So they left breakfast around 11. She went back. She did whatever. She was on her computer for a few hours chatting with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
There is surveillance footage of her leaving her apartment between 5 and 5:15 p.m.
Okay.
Their joint American Express was swiped at Century 21, which is not a real estate company. It's a, like, a store, like a department store.
If you don't mind, I'm sorry. I just want some clarification. Yep. Two things. Was she carrying luggage or anything when she left on surveillance?
Nope.
Okay. And does she have a vehicle? Because people that live in the city often...
No, she doesn't.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. So their credit card is swiped at a department store around $600. They pull surveillance footage and she's shopping alone. She buys a dress, lingerie, pantyhose, a set of bed linens, and 3 pairs of shoes.
Nothing unusual, really.
No, just like a few outfits. It's like what you buy at the Macy's.
Yeah, you're on a shopping spree.
Right. So they actually identify the sales clerk that checked her out in the shoe department. And here's where it gets a little weird. The sales clerk says, yep, I saw her. I remember it. She was with a friend who was a petite, dark-skinned, also in her early 30s. Female.
Okay.
No surveillance photos ever pick this person up.
Okay.
And whenever they see Sneha, she's alone.
Easily you could think of that as you just are recalling things incorrectly. You see a lot of people during...
Or like maybe she ran into someone and was like, oh, that's a cute dress. Oh, that is too...
Right.
So this mystery friend has never come forward. And once Sneha has leaves the store, she's never seen again. Maybe.
So, right. So this is around 7-ish p.m. or so? Okay.
Yeah. And this is a maybe. Now, there's footage of her apartment building at 8:40 a.m. the morning of 9/11.
Oh. In or outside?
Inside her apartment building.
Okay. So she could have done anything the night before, but at some point she returned to her apartment.
Hold on. I'm not done yet. So the footage is, like I said, is taken around 8:40 a.m. Now, as I just said, the first crash happened at 8:46.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is like within minutes before the towers crash.
And she's 4 to 5 blocks away.
There's a woman that walks into her apartment complex. It's waiting at the elevator bank.
Okay.
The footage shows a woman that looks a lot like her standing in the lobby. But it's all like stainless steel in the lobby and the sun is reflecting against the camera.
So it's really not a clear picture.
Her husband says, I think it's her, but I'm not 100% sure. The woman's waiting for the elevator.
Okay.
There's a loud boom and she runs outside. Which is the normal reaction if the plane hit, to go look.
Yeah, you want to see, is it my building? Is it a car crash? What is it?
Right. So with that footage, the family starts to actually think she may have died in 9/11. And they begin to like mold this narrative that she went out for drinks after shopping and ended up staying at a friend's place. She headed home in the morning and then the attacks happened. The only hole in that story was, where are her shopping bags?
True. And why wouldn't someone step forward?
Even if she wore the clothes she bought out that night, she still would have had clothes to bring home. And the sheets. And the extra shoes.
Right. And wouldn't a friend have stepped forward, provided they weren't involved in the terrorist attacks, you know, and said, oh yeah, she came to my house that night.
In theory, sure, if she knew the person. Remember, she went home with strangers.
I mean, well, yes, but wouldn't someone remember at some point in time over the last 19, 20 years, whatever it is, that a stranger came home and then they heard a news report? I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Amy, I'm with you. So her family's narrative is sort of, this is what happened. She's a hero, right? This is where NYPD's investigation takes a little bit different turn. NYPD says, yeah, we hear you. And, you know, like, we understand that. But you didn't really talk about all the things happening in her life at this time.
Fair.
So, you know how I mentioned that she had court that morning?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so... In spring of 2001, she actually got fired, or her contract was not renewed for her residency for tardiness and alcohol-related issues.
Oh, okay. That's sad.
It is. So then she got into an altercation that required her to spend a night in jail.
Okay.
She was ordered to go to, like, substance abuse counseling.
Uh-huh.
And she got her new internship. Right, which is where she was. But the reason she was off on the 10th and 11th is she had just been suspended because she missed her counseling appointments.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's a police report that says that she was sexually harassed or assaulted by another residence person in her residency.
Honest to goodness, I was going to ask you if she had been through trauma.
So there's a police report that says this. This assault supposedly happened, and I don't, not to discredit her at all, but she accused a colleague of grabbing her inappropriately and filed charges against them.
Okay.
Once they did their investigation, and I mean the police did their investigation, they said this is not true. There was no assault. And basically said, you need to recant your story or we're going to charge you with filing a false complaint. Wow. And she refused to recant. And that's why she had court that morning. If she was assaulted, this poor woman, it reminds me of the show Unbelievable, you know, where it didn't happen, it didn't happen, it didn't, but it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And now, granted, that was a whole nother level. This is, and I'm not saying that being grabbed inappropriately is not an assault, but comparatively, obviously. So this is where, you know, that came out. So she had court that morning for trying to file a false report and all those things.
Right.
Right. So that's the first sort of red flag, I guess. Now, then it comes out that she began frequenting gay and lesbian bars. Now, I don't care either way. Her husband says, yeah, I knew that. She said she had been sexually assaulted. She didn't want to get hit in by men and wanted to go to the bar still.
Okay.
Which seems plausible to me.
It does. Or she's just fluid and exploring her sexuality.
Right. And in 2001, that is not an acceptable conversation.
True. Well, it's still not sometimes.
I was going to say, and not like it is now either, where, you know, there is an inclusive audience of that.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, she is going home with these women she meets at bars and sleeping on their couch because she needs a place to crash.
Yeah.
I don't know what I read into that, but either way. Then we find out that the police have discovered the reason her and her brother hadn't talked for 2 weeks is because he had walked in on her and his then girlfriend having sex.
Wow, that's fairly intense.
Her brother has since said this is not true.
Okay.
But this is all in the police reports and the court documents.
Wow, and for that not to be true when he's saying that about another woman that's involved, that's, I don't know. He's making a...
I'd like his girlfriend to make a statement.
I guess that's what I'm looking for, yeah.
She's never said anything about it.
Okay.
And she didn't, like, step up beside him when he said it wasn't true.
I see.
Whatever you might think of that. Finally, her family says that she was fired from her first internship not because of alcohol and tardiness, but because she had complained about racial bias. And the hospital said we never had any complaints about that by her or anything by her.
Mm-hmm.
Final issue that the police unearthed that was, I guess, is whatever, is apparently after they left court on the 10th, her and Ron got into a fight over alleged extramarital affairs with women. Ron says it didn't happen. So it's either all of this is concocted by police or it's true. But either way, I will tell you that, and sort of the end of this, and then we'll get into the theories, is to get your family as a victim of 9/11, you have to, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim by the judge. The first time they tried to do it, the judge said no. There's no clear and convincing evidence that she was there. Okay. The second time they went back and they appealed, they said it's not known where she was on the 10th, But it's on her route home. She lives near the World Trade Center. She is a medical professional. And there's a good chance she could have been the person in that picture. So they will allow her to be the 2,751st victim of 9/11.
I see.
So as of right now, she is considered a victim of 9/11. She is considered passed away. And her family does support that for the most part. But law enforcement isn't convinced.
I see.
And that's the end of the story.
It's a complicated one.
It's so complicated. So, at first jump, what are your questions?
Just kind of what was going through my mind when you were telling me the story and kind of the intricacies of her life. What came to mind for me was, I'll tell you the first thing, and it's, you know, what I heard first was she's going out, she's drinking, she's spending nights out and coming home the next day. I thought of this hardworking person that never went out and had the true stereotypical, I stress stereotypical, college experience. She's studying, she's working really hard at becoming a doctor, and it doesn't stop after college graduation because she goes on with her medical career, basically. So maybe she's catching up. That's just a thought. Maybe she's trying to make up for lost time, and she's having that stage a little later, and it wouldn't be unusual.
No, but she's also risking her entire career if we believe that she's being suspended and fired for alcohol issues.
Well, then when you said that, and I think of the other things such as chatting it up and going home with strangers when she is spending money like that. Granted, it was only one instance. I question if a mental health issue that she was maybe able to not control, but keep it
mask
or mask in the past because she was so busy and focused on what she had to do is now coming to the forefront. So something like a bipolar is coming up when you're manic, you spend money, you take risks. Drugs and alcohol aren't foreign.
And just to like sort of loop that back in now, a lot of people are saying the downtime of COVID-19 and like the being at home is exacerbating or highlighting mental health challenges.
Well, yes. That is true.
So if her being home from work with nothing to do could be doing that.
It's 100% plausible. And then my last thought was possibly trauma, because sometimes when you're drinking to mask something that's going on or you're having angry outbursts, sometimes that happens. I don't know.
Or truthfully, she was struggling with her sexuality, and in 2001, it was a different world than it is now, and I don't know what, like, her family situation is like or any of that, and she was struggling with what that looked like.
Yeah, that cultural aspect as well, and I'm not as familiar with her culture, or even if she identified with her culture, but that might have plausibly been a challenge for her.
I agree. So there are three main theories, and foul play is obviously one of them.
Yep.
And this is one of the cases where I'm like, I almost dismissed that outright.
You know what? Yeah. Honestly, it didn't come to
mind.
And
it's not often. Yeah. So then we're left with the two that are the main theories, right? There's she died in 9/11.
Yep.
In which she's, in my opinion, a hero. Regardless of anything, she's a hero.
Well, your background and your character does not warrant what happens to you, you know?
Right.
If you deserve it, is what I mean.
There's the she left her life camp.
Okay.
So the she left her life camp is actually a pretty solid camp. And we'll talk through 9/11 for 1 second because I think that's a simpler conversation. If she is the one on the elevator footage, on the footage waiting for the elevator, and she went outside, it's super plausible that she went outside to help with 9/11 And that was it.
Yes.
You know, if that's the, and she lived super close to Ground Zero. I mean, we all know what it was like. I mean, not like personally, but it was like with the aftermath of 9/11. We know millions were injured, and we know, you know, New York City was literally a madhouse.
Mm-hmm. It was.
So, you know, if she was in fact leaving her life, that, I mean, killed in 9/11, then I think that's very plausible.
Yes. I do too. Okay.
Then there's the leaving her life.
Yeah, tell me your thoughts on this one.
This would require someone else being involved, in my opinion.
Okay.
And here's why. Where did she go that night, the 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the bags that she bought of all the stuff?
Okay.
Where did she go the next morning? And the left her life happens one of two ways, right? It was, I was already thinking it, and this created an opportunity. Or it's she evacuated, realized that she was on the missing list and was like, I'm done. I'm never going back. I don't have to go back.
Mm-hmm.
I think both are equally plausible. However, I think the evacuated and then was like, I don't have to go back thing, more people would probably know, because who did she evacuate with? She didn't have a car.
Right.
I sort of think I fall into the camp of her life was in shambles. She didn't know what she wanted. I don't know if she even wanted to be a doctor anymore.
Yeah.
And then, in my opinion, she probably, and I don't know this for a fact, this is just my speculation, she's struggling with her sexuality. It's easier to use this as a out than to tell everyone in your life that you want to get a divorce, you want to be with women, all of that, mm-hmm. especially in 2001. I'm not condoning that. I'm not saying that's okay. I'm just saying I could see why for her, she was being charged with falsifying a police report, right? She's fired for, on leave from her internship, suspension.
Okay.
Her husband, you know, is obviously trying to figure out if the argument on the court steps happened, why she's going home with women. She's engaging in reckless behavior, going to gay bars and coming home with random people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the articles I read was like, she told her husband that she went home with these people and they just like talked until they fell asleep. And sometimes they did art projects together.
Okay.
And I was like, bless his heart. That's a Southern phrase for like, please tell me you didn't believe that.
Right.
But I could see that being a completely plausible out for her.
Okay.
I see your face. Which no one else can see, so share your words.
I can't really pick up on what you fall into, so I'm wondering first where you fall.
I think I fall in the she left her life.
You do?
I think I do. And apparently, if someone goes missing and they're a medical student, I think they leave their life. So medical school must be really, really stressful, because this is the second medical student that I've said left their life.
Oh, that's true. That is true. So here's where I fall. I fall in a very simple explanation of the noise happened. She ran out and saw how she could help. And it wasn't just if you were in the building that your life was in a lot of danger. It was if you were around the building.
Oh, 100%.
It's exaggerating, but it took down half of Manhattan.
Yeah, I know.
Ash, dust, all of that. I think that if she were to leave her life and have the foresight that this is a good opportunity for me to just skate, well, first of all, I don't think that you could have had that foresight. When the chaos is happening, you don't know that this is going to, you don't know it's a terrorist attack, first of all. You don't know how she doesn't have a phone. She doesn't know her cell phone isn't working. She doesn't know that the world's going to be in disarray for the next 20 years. Okay.
Okay. But hold on. Well, I have like three questions for you.
Okay.
One, she's far enough that the World Trade Center didn't collapse on her. So where's her body?
I think that she probably ran down the street. It took quite a long time for the first tower to drop.
Okay, I agree with you. Where are her shopping bags?
They can't identify human remains, let alone shopping bags.
But it's not in the video. It's not like it's in her hand, like she's and dropped it in the lobby. That would be the be-all, end-all. You know, if they had bags from the store and this person dropped it and ran out, we can reasonably say, oh, that's her. And she's passed away in 9/11. This person was empty-handed.
You're right. I did forget about that.
And if she left them at someone's house, why has that person never come forward?
Well, right.
Unless that person knows she left her life.
I mean, it's plausible because they didn't know each other and this person didn't tune into the next missing person's case. That they just didn't know that this person ended up going missing and leaving their stuff behind.
I mean, I guess it's possible because, I mean, you think about the volume of missing persons cases that happened. You're not going to follow every single one in 9/11 because, unfortunately, there were far too many. So.
But it also might not have been her in the surveillance video.
By the elevators or at the store?
By the elevators.
Okay. So then where was she?
She could have easily just slept at someone's house.
Then where is she now?
Same result. It could have been that she was downtown and that she ran to help.
It's not impossible, but I just...
I think things may have been tough for her, but I don't know if it constituted leaving your life in such a fashion and never contacting anyone ever again.
Except for if she... So let's say she did evacuate, right? She doesn't have a cell phone. She knows Ron's at work and then traveling, so she doesn't even bother trying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, 2 or 3 days later, she just says, I'm done?
Could it happen? Sure. But were things so bad that she would never talk to anyone ever again?
Okay. I want to tell you one more thing.
Okay.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a website called Post Secret?
Yes, I have. I don't know why, but I have.
Okay. It's for those of you that haven't. It's a website where you send in, like, you can text, you can email, you can send in postcards, you can do whatever, right? And you write a secret, essentially. And you send it anonymously, and then they post it on the website, right? And it's just this anonymous, there's, like, apps like that now. It's basically write down your secret and send it in, and then you've set it free type thing.
Yeah.
So there's this Post Secret, right, that someone sent in to postsecret.com.
Yep.
And it's a picture of, I don't know, I would just call it, like, I don't know if it's supposed to be like a rendering of 9/11, but it's just like two columns that are blurry.
Yeah.
And it says, everyone who knew me before 9/11 believes I'm dead.
What?
That's the secret.
That's eerie. Is it in handwriting?
I'll put it on our website so you guys can, and on our social media. I would say it looks printed, but I don't know.
Okay.
And everyone, just so you know, on the internet, attributes this to Sneha Phillip. It's not a stretch, but it's also not necessarily realistic.
I don't know. Eerie. Absolutely. To me, there's no proof in that. It could be someone just wanting to stir the pot or something.
Yeah, but it is creepy, though.
I still think, as much as that throws me off my kilter a little bit and freaks me out, to be honest.
It gives you chills, right? It gives you, like, the goosebumps.
It does. It does. I still think this, it's just a very simple explanation. She's a doctor. She went to help. She didn't make it.
I think I fall on the she walked away.
Okay.
So y'all tell us what you think. I'm interested to know what everyone else thinks happened.
Yes. Are you on the, hey, simple explanation like Amy, or left her life like Melissa?
I like that you just totally downplayed my whole theory. Are you on the right path of simple explanation or the wrong path of what Melissa thinks?
Trying to sway my people out there.
Oh. Please tell us what you guys think. We'd love to hear it. We just would love to hear, like, what your thoughts are. Let me know about this post-secret thing. And if you know anyone or anyone that had actually done it and been honest, I'd love to hear that, because I think it's just interesting. I don't know. Whatever.
Yes. We will see you next week. Same time, same place. And thanks again. All right.
If you haven't, like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things on social media. If you like us, we'd love a 5-star review. If you love us, we'd also like a nice review written. It's up to you. If you hate us, please don't be mean.
Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
All right. Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Amy Lamar.